I don't think I'm going to tell that story. And I'm not going to put this in the cold open either.
I'll release the uncut episode.
The uncircumcised.
The uncircumcised.
What's up? This is Movies On Up. Imagine having to win over the girl of your dreams every friggin' day. My co-host for every friggin' episode is seated across from me, Mr. Dave Becella.
That's me.
That's Mr. Dave. I am
50
Ryan.
50 Shades of co-host.
We are Movies On Up. Imagine having to win over the girl of your dreams every friggin' day is our tagline for this week. And if that sounds like deja vu, it is. We've used that one not too
probably.
Long ago. Probably. But it's
50
I guess
Shades
it was,
of Familiar.
Yes. It was more appropriate then than it is now. But you know, if you know what it is. It's pretty on the nose. If you do know what it is, we would love for you to send your guest to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet your guest to us @moviesonup on the Twitter if you are correct. And if we choose you, we will be 50 Shades of Pleased to send you a prize package. It'll be full of all sorts of anal beads and butt plugs and other stuff for your butt, I guess.
Yeah, we'll get to that. That's
maybe even a book. Who knows? This week, Book Club comes out in theaters, which stars a bunch of...
I completely forgot why we were doing it.
Stars a bunch of fine actresses that meet up, put a book club together surrounding 50 Shades of Grey.
Bunch of old ladies jerking off to 50 Shades.
Indeed. Now, we could have done a cast of Book Club. We could have done, like, Jane Fonda movies or right. Mary Steenburgen. Yeah, there's a bunch of ladies in it.
Favorite movies about book clubs?
That would have been a possibility. But Dave, prior to having done this podcast, he had never seen 50 Shades of Grey. I had seen it, so we thought it would be fun to make Dave watch it. And then do an episode on that. Because if we don't do it now...
And I'm bitter because...
It was your idea?
Well, yeah. But we generally record a handful episodes at a time, which I don't think that's any secret now. I had this locked up and ready to go a few weeks ago. I crammed it the night before to make sure I was ready.
You did.
And then we didn't do it. So I've been sitting on this nonsense for weeks now. Just gestating in there where I just want to get it out and just erase that part of my memory. But I couldn't until we did this, or else I'd have to rewatch it.
I've seen it a couple times. It won't kill you, I'll tell you that. And that we are talking about, of course, is Sam Taylor Johnson's 50 Shades of Grey from 2015, starring Dakota Johnson, Jamie Dornan, and Dakota Johnson's butt. It opened, predictably, number one with $85 million on February 13th, 2015, Valentine's Day weekend. Kingsman, The Secret Service, also came out that week. It was in second place. SpongeBob, Sponge Out of Water, American Sniper, and Jupiter Ascending round out the top five in descending order. 50 Shades went on to gross $166 million domestically, which makes it the 282nd highest grossing movie of all time. One spot and a couple thousand dollars ahead of the Roland Emmerich, John Cusack disaster movie 2012 from 2009. And just below the first of the Fockers cinematic universe.
Meet the Parents.
Meet the Parents.
The trilogy.
Yeah.
We got a Fockers trilogy.
Yeah.
Ugh.
We also got a 50 Shades trilogy. What we did not get was a 2012 trilogy.
Thank God.
What's up with that? I mentioned this movie did come in first place on opening weekend. I was part of that opening weekend money. I believe we actually saw it on opening night. Not that necessarily Sarah and I were that interested in going to see this movie. She wanted to see it. She, I believe, had read all the books. I was just curious what the opening night audience for 50 Shades of Grey was going to be. That's what I was there to do, is to just be right that it was going to be a bunch of ladies. And it certainly was. The theater, and me. Theater was probably 90-10 in favor of the ladies, and I'm not surprised by that. There were a couple guys that you could tell were there taking one for the team that night. But I will say this. One of the reasons you want to go to a movie is to have a good time. When all the ladies were filing in, big groups of them, it seemed like they'd probably gone to dinner and maybe had one or two before they got to the theater. It looked like everyone was having a good time, and I certainly can't blame anybody for that. Myself, I guess I didn't have the greatest of time. But the faces of the people coming into the movie, I think, were vastly different than the faces of the same people as they were leaving the movie. I don't think that folks enjoyed it as much as they thought they would, and that's evidenced by the sequel making about $52 million less, and the third, which came out just this year, I believe, grossed just over $100 million, with openings of about 46 and 38, respectively. I don't think anybody thinks that these are good movies, and after the opening weekend, especially after the opening weekend of the first one, everyone kind of knew that.
Yeah, and I mean, it only ended at 160 some, right? And it opened at 80.
82, yeah.
That's not very good. That's,
nope. It made 50% of its money in the first weekend.
In February. Yes. So it's not like it was released in the summer and then 2 weeks later, a big Marvel tentpole came out. No, it was released at a dead time. You can release a movie in February and hold on to top spot for weeks if it delivers, and I feel like this would have. And honestly, I didn't know it made so little. When you said 165, I didn't realize it was that much of a failure. That's less than the Ghostbusters reboot.
In fairness, the movie was obviously rated R, so that does kind of limit some of your earning potential. I'm not going to use it as an excuse for why this movie didn't do better.
I think the movie is the excuse for why this movie didn't do better.
Well, sure. I don't think it's a good movie. I would go on to say, even at $166 million, that's a fair amount of money. But I don't think that that's what the studio had in mind for this. And certainly, spinning it forward, $100 million is not what they had in mind for the third one.
No, when you compare book sales to, I mean, you're coming off a Twilight was massive. I mean, it kind of limped to the end. Hunger Games,
right?
Harry Potter's, obviously. Like, those are all books that made a cultural impact, and they became a part of pop culture, very much like 50 Shades did. You didn't have to know about books or read it to know what 50 Shades was.
The less you knew about literature, probably the better off you were.
You could mention Anastasia Steele or Christian Grey to random dudes, and they would know about it without ever touching the book. So, I mean, for the cultural impact that this book had and the amount of books that it sold, that's peanut. Granted, it's different than a $100 million movie. It's not like they were spending $100, $150 on these and only pulling in $160. They're probably relatively cheap. Like, not looking at the budget, I can't imagine these would cost that much to make.
We'll circle back around to the book sales, but for what it's worth, I do want to mention they sold over 150 million copies of the book. So there were people that were interested in this story. It's not like they adapted a book that no one had read. I mean,
I worked in book sales at the peak of this, and I was in multiple stores doing books, and we couldn't keep it in stock anywhere, any of the three.
Sure. So with something that is that hot, I think we're both in agreement that, you know, $166 million for the first one is not good enough. So clearly the next two aren't going to be good enough as well. So why then did things not work out well? And when you're looking at why movies, any given movie fails, there's a couple of the usual suspects, and we're going to kind of go through each of them. And I want to start with the director. I think that Sam Taylor Johnson, I think she's a good director. I don't believe that she's got that much work under her belt. She's got that Nowhere Boy. Yeah, the John Lennon movie, which was good.
She's not a bad director. She's not a great director, but there's nothing wrong with her. Like, she's not the kind of director that I'm going to turn away from her movies, but she's also not one that's making me rush out and see him.
Right.
She's competent.
With this, I think she actually, from a directing standpoint, I think her and the DP, Seamus McGarvey, have some really good shots in there. And not even necessarily like we're going to backlight Anastasia's leg hair. There's some composition in it where, okay, maybe there's nothing interesting going on the screen, but at least it's presented in a way that might keep you engaged somehow. I don't think the movie was poorly directed. I don't lay this on the director's feet as why this didn't. And she didn't direct all three of them. She only directed the first one. The other two were worse.
Yeah, they had a bigger budget. I looked up the budget. This one was made for $40 million. So it quadrupled the budget.
Yeah.
The next two were 55, so barely doubling. She was put in a tough spot on this because the material is bad. This script is terribly, terribly bad. Literally, like, nothing happened. She's trying to make a movie that's compelling and pace it when nothing happens, but she still managed to give it a tone. Like, when you watch it, it feels like one of those maybe 90s movies like Sleeping with the Enemy or The Unlawful Entry. Like, it has that kind of visual feel to where I'm watching like a 90s thriller and I'm just waiting for stuff to go south.
But there's no thrill.
There's nothing happens. No, you're just waiting for something. I always mention Catfish, the documentary. Like, it's a documentary, but it feels like you're watching a horror movie. They've got the tone of it down. That's how this feels. It feels like oh, something's going to happen, and then it doesn't.
You watch all three of them, and I guess maybe something happened by the time the third one's over, but you mentioned the source material. That's kind of the other thing. One of the other things that people look at, and you know, you can put lipstick on a pig and that whole thing. I mean, I don't love the source material, but we mentioned that the series did sell 150 million copies. Even if you divide that by three, there's three books. You got 50 million copies per book, and let's say if 40% of those people go to the movie with an average ticket cost of $8.50, that'd be $170 million. Not only did none of these movies do that, they didn't seem to bring anyone else that maybe hadn't read the books and thought, oh, well, I'll just check out the movie instead.
It didn't open up a new audience, whereas like Hunger Games, Harry Potter, that introduced a whole new audience to those books. I wouldn't say the same for Twilight, maybe, but like I think those people went back and reread or read Harry Potter, read Hunger Games.
Or even new people that hadn't watched the movies and thought, oh, I am going to go back and reread this and see what I missed from the movie.
And what those got, and I mean, granted, you're comparing movies with, well, I mean, Hunger Games is only four, but like you got people catching on later. You know, I wasn't there at the beginning of Harry Potter. I didn't catch on until the first one I saw in theaters was Half-Blood Prince. So, I mean, I caught on late, but I had watched all the previous ones and read all the books in the, like, month and a half before that. Because once I caught on, I was in, and I got caught up on the movies, read all the books, and then saw Half-Blood Prince. So, I mean, it got people coming in, and I don't feel like 50 Shades did that, obviously, because it lost a lot of its audience as it went on. So it didn't even keep its audience, let alone grow it.
Exactly. But the source material, I think, did that. So you kind of have to, I guess, put the script aside. I don't think people were expecting a Blacklist script for this. I think they kind of had a feeling what they were going to get. But for whatever reason, even as low as the bar would have been there, I don't think that was the problem. So it kind of leaves you with the lead. Your actors are kind of the next place you would look. And I don't think there's any secret, or at least Dakota Johnson didn't make any secret of the fact that she didn't really fancy Jamie Dornan all that much. I would admit this would probably be a hella awkward movie, let alone series to make, especially with someone that you don't really have good chemistry with.
I mean, there was talk of recasting after the first one. Either just doing it over, like essentially starting 50 Shades Free with an entirely new cast, or at least recasting him.
Right.
The chemistry was so bad.
When Sarah and I watched the movie, there was a drinking game that we were playing along with it, and we played with most of the rules, but the one we threw out was, you know, take a drink every time you notice that their chemistry is bad, because there just wasn't enough alcohol in the house. You'd be drinking for 2 hours straight.
Neither of them had anything to work with. You know, there are actors that can take bad stuff and make it watchable and elevate it. This, I think, was...
There's nothing to elevate.
There's nothing to elevate, and I don't think either of them are good enough to do that. So you have two actors who are... I like Dakota Johnson. I think she's good. Jamie Dornan, he's okay in The Fall, but outside of that, like, I haven't liked him in anything. They're okay. You're taking competent actors and giving them subpar material. What competent actors do is they work with the material they're given. They're not going to make it worse. They're not going to make it better. They're just taking it.
They play the hand they're dealt.
So there's nothing compelling about either of them in these roles. I think the casting, I'm not going to sit here and say I've read the books. I've read enough of the books to know. I feel like the casting was wrong, and I felt that from the very beginning. I always thought she was an awkward choice for Anastasia Steele. She was not how I imagined her. Him, I see more than Charlie Hunnam, but at least Charlie Hunnam was interesting. He has this kind of, he's got this appeal to him that I feel like Dornan lacked. I just feel like you were just looking at two blank slates. I had a third grader writing on him.
You mentioned Charlie Hunnam. Jamie Dornan was not obviously the first choice for the role. E.L. James's choice, she really went out of the box when she was considering who should play her leads. she went with Robert Pattinson and Kay Stu, basically the two actors that played the characters that these
in
two
her
were.
Head, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That, by the time 2015 came, that would have been really weird to see the two of them do that. Dakota Johnson, you say she's a weird choice for it. Could you see Alicia Vikander?
Maybe at that point, because she's an unknown commodity
at that point.
At that
point, maybe.
And she's very compelling. Like, I think she's interesting.
Academy Award
on
winner.
Yeah, she's one of those that can elevate lower material. She's
could.
A fantastic actress.
I think she did okay by not getting cast in this. Some of the other names: Imogen Poots, Elizabeth Olsen, Shailene Woodley, Felicity Jones, and reportedly Emilia Clarke had passed on it because of all the nudity. And I don't blame her for doing that.
Yeah, and who was the one? I think it might just be me casting this, but wasn't Anna Kendrick like the one that was like the dream casting on the internet and stuff? Wasn't she one of the ones that was like...
I remember hearing a lot of names. She was a name.
Ellen Page was a name. Yeah.
I want to say I even heard Natalie Portman, but I don't know if those are real. Yeah.
I think Anna Kendrick and Ellen Page are the two that I remember the most, like going around online is like, oh, that's Anastasia Steele and that's Anna Kendrick. Those are known commodities,
yeah.
And I feel like Dakota Johnson and Dornan weren't.
Right.
So they wanted to build off of Potter, Hunger Games, Twilight. Those were all unknown commodities. And I feel like they were trying to duplicate that. But these, I feel like if you go for star power with these two, I think you make a completely different movie.
Charlie Hunnam at the time was probably bigger than he is now. That's
yeah.
right at the...
Sons of Anarchy was still on.
Peak of
I
Sons
think it was
Anarchy.
Just ending... Pacific Rim was still fresh.
Yeah.
Like, he was still in that, hey, maybe he's a movie star kind of thing, which I think we're over that now. But yeah,
probably. But he had to drop out kind of late into the process because of his shooting schedule for Sons of Anarchy. And I had read interviews of him that said he had really good chemistry with Dakota Johnson. So it's almost like what could have been. I guess maybe this movie could have been at least a bit better had he been able
to
do
Hunnam's,
it.
Hunnam's not a great actor, but he's compelling. Even when he's not good, he's worth watching. There's something about him that he's really, really good on screen. I'll never accuse him of being this top-notch actor, but even in bad stuff, he's compelling to watch. He's got charisma. That's something
yes.
that both of these lacked.
And some of it was probably written that way. I specifically think Christian Grey is a guy that is sort of without charisma. He's just an attractive guy that has a lot of money. Some of the other people that were considered when they were looking at Dornan, Alexander Skarsgård.
See, I could
see
that.
That was True Blood. Yeah. Theo James.
That's terrible.
It's terrible.
He's terrible.
Not good. I think he's got that look. That's the kid from Divergent.
He's named Four because he's got four fears.
Yeah, so him and Shailene Woodley, that could have been a rekindling of that wonderful chemistry.
That would have been a TV movie.
Francois Arnaud, Scott Eastwood, Luke Bracey, Billy Magnuson, those guys were all in the running. Yeah, I think at some point the studio wanted Gosling, but he had the good sense to just stay away from that. A lot of guys did. I think Stephen Amell was like, nah, I don't find this interesting.
Even he, I think, is... interesting. Like, I don't like
yes.
him as an actor. He would have been a good choice. Like,
yes,
when
he would have.
Dornan, I don't think is, like I said, I think he's more Christian Grey than I see is Hunnam, but like, I just don't see her as Steele. And she wasn't terrible in them. She's just, there's nothing to do.
She's not bad, and I don't think either of them particularly bad. I think they were handed a really tough assignment, and the fact that they didn't really like each other, I think made what they actually had to do a bit more difficult. But if it's not the directing that caused the movie to suck, it's not necessarily the leads. I think they did their best with what they had. And it's not the source material. People seem to like that. Then you're left with trying still to figure out why these movies weren't as successful as the books. And I think there could be a couple reasons for that. The first one, I think the books, I listened to the first one on audio because I didn't want anybody to see me with that book and know that I was reading a book written for a middle-aged woman. And the books are certainly more racy. I think women got fired up reading the books, and I think they came out disappointed when they didn't see his penis. Because, spoiler alert, you don't.
I was okay with that.
Not seeing his penis?
Mm-hmm. And I'm not anti-dong. I was okay with it without seeing it.
But I do think a movie based off a book that is as salacious as 50 Shades was,
yeah,
I'm not sure what a realistic expectation would have been. It's not going to be a porn. If that's what you want to watch, there's the internet. You can stay home. But I do think that people, there's a level of what they expected and there's what they got. And I don't think those were really close.
Because even the kink was pretty toned down. It was a softcore porn. That's all it was. Like, it was a...
It's a Skinamax movie.
It was a Skinamax movie. You know, at least with Skinamax, like, there's some sort of plot. Like, oh, this lady's in a different land and she has to get back to her home planet. Or, oh, we got to save...
That one sounds good. What's that?
Oh, something Bigfoot. It's a Bigfoot sex movie. Bigfoot. We're like, oh, we got to save the wreck hall, so let's have a car wash. And, like, that's at least a plot. Like, what is the plot of 50 Shades of Grey? Honestly, sell it to me in one sentence without mentioning sex or kink or BDSM. Like, what is it about?
A boring guy wants to date a boring girl and they have relationship issues.
Like, that's it. And I think a large part of why it didn't do as well is, I think when you're reading it, a housewife that's sneaking into the bathroom or sneaking upstairs after the kids are in bed, this is their porn. When you watch a porn, you're not concerned whether they eat their pizza before it gets cold. So as you're reading it,
I hate wasting pizza.
You're just getting from point fuck to point fuck B. You're just going from kink to kink. I don't think the rest of it really sinks in. And then you see it and you watch this movie and you realize, like, this is not healthy. This is straight up almost abuse. She's just straight up in an abuseful relationship. And he's psychotic. He's a terrible, terrible...
He's 50 Shades of fucked up.
He's a terrible, terrible person, and she doesn't know any better. And I think it resonates more when you're watching it, and instead of just going from fuck to fuck, it's like, oh, this is not healthy for
this
her.
This is the time that she ought to leave.
This is
but
where I
want
to step
gonna...
in and yeah. say, girl, no. I feel like in the book, maybe he was this charming...
No.
But I mean, like, he was this fantasy, I guess. Like, this fantasy thing. And I think seeing him on screen, it's like, oh, that's not good.
I think the fantasy is an interesting idea here. When we read a book and we have an idea of how everything plays out, I can remember reading the Lord of the Rings books and having an idea of what Middle Earth would look like. And then Peter Jackson made a Middle Earth that looked better than what it was in my mind. And that's why that was successful. Because he was able to deliver on that fantasy. I think people had in their minds, you know, maybe this idealized version of Christian Grey, who was going to be so incredibly attractive. And the sex scenes that maybe as they play out in our minds, you know, they can't play out the same way in a Hollywood movie. And I think that was part of people's fantasies, people's expectations were never going to be able to be met.
Watching this would be like wanting Flint to fuck Jaws. The one is prey and the one is a strict predator. Like, in that interview, he just got fixated on her for no reason and nothing, and just straight up stalked her and then emotionally abused her. And it's just like, if you watch this movie and think, oh, Christian Grey is this dreamboat and that's the kind of relationship you want, just look in the mirror and say, I love you and I deserve better. Because you do. You're beautiful inside and out. You deserve somebody who cares about you, not somebody who you're having an innocent conversation and then all of a sudden they find out you're a virgin in your early 20s, and instead of diving into, like, oh, why? Like, what has made you decide that? It's like, oh, nope, let's fuck. Get that over with. That right there is a red flag. If you've made it that far without giving it up, that's a character thing. Like, that's...
Yeah, the guy you want to be involved with is the dude that wants to put a bunch of stuff up your butt.
Exactly. Oh, God. And that's... We didn't even talk about the negotiation scene. Like, that is honestly the worst, probably one of the worst movie scenes I've ever seen in my life in a movie that's trying to be taken serious. Where it's like, oh, no anal fisting. What about regular fisting? No. And then she asks, like, what is...
Strike it.
She's talking about anal fisting and all this. And then she asks something like, what are anal beads? Or something like that. And it's like, that's basic. Ask what a fucking cuckold is or something. Use something more with Superman and me. Like, use something that's more, like, what are anal... They're fucking self-explanatory. They're beads that go up your anus. Like, I don't think that's that hard. I mean... Depends on the size, but I
mean,
just...
she knew what anal fisting was.
Exactly.
What?
So
How is that more easy concept to understand?
Just that whole scene. It's, I get, in a way, it was kind of tongue-in-cheek.
Yes,
but in a way, not. Because that's actually, that's the most plot thing there is. Like, this is the fuck contract. The closest thing to a plot is he wants her to sign the fuck contract. She doesn't want to sign the fuck contract. That's the closest thing to a plot, to a conflict that you have, because they're still meeting in the middle and fucking. And so the fuck contract is just this thing that it's a red herring almost, that like it's irrelevant. Like, it's not signed.
They fucked before it.
Yeah, and during, like, and
yeah.
I don't get this movie. And honestly, like, the reason I wanted to record it a couple weeks ago is when we did our Avengers Infinity War episode, because it was fitting that we saw this, that I saw this so close to Infinity War, because without spoiling anything, Infinity War ends and, like, my jaw just dropped. It's one of the most punch-in-the-gut endings that I've ever seen.
That you immediately have to find out what happens next.
I cut short of that. When Infinity War ends, it's like, did I just see that? Did that just happen? Like, is that's the credits? That's the exact same thing I felt when watched 50 Shades of Grey, but for completely different reasons. Like, it ends and it's like, wait, that's it? That's like, that's the movie? What? Is this real? It felt like one of the season finales of Walking Dead, the first season with the governor, where it was like, it ended and it's like, that's a prank, right? Like, this isn't real. Like, I'm being punked, correct? Like, this, there's like a whole other thing that other people are seeing, and I saw like the prank version, because it just ends and it's like, what happened? So there's this fuck contract. They fuck many times. He's 50 shades of fucked up. Show me. They have more fucking that's not even that crazy. You will never do that to me again. Elevator leaves, over. What? And you're building a trilogy off of that? Girl, leave. Go down that elevator and leave. And don't come back for the next two
that
books.
That was it. Like, if you leave the theater and you only saw the first one, you have a much different opinion. Like,
it's a happy ending.
Exactly. She left that psycho. No, she didn't. She married him and then ended up shooting her boss.
Like, this movie makes me angry.
Well, you did mention scenes earlier, in the fuck contract scene, and something that we haven't done in a while is some movies on a theater. And
I hope it's not the fuck contract
scene. It's not the fuck contract scene, but because it is a book. Right. Because it is a book, I thought it would be appropriate to read a section of the book. I selected a section for Dave. He's going to read it. I'm not really going to set it up too much because it doesn't need set up all that much. The book is written from Anastasia's perspective, so Dave will be giving us voice to Anastasia, and I do believe Christian has a couple lines. He'll take care of those too. But the scene, it takes place in a bathtub, and if you are familiar with the book, I don't think it played out quite the same way in the movie, but it's definitely more graphic in the book.
I leaned forward while he has his eyes closed and place my lips around him tentatively and suck, running my tongue over the tip. Whoa, Anna. His eyes fly open and I suck harder. Him. He's hard and soft at once, like steel encased in velvet and surprisingly tasty, salty and smooth. Christ, he groans and he closes his eyes again. Moving down, I push him into my mouth. He groans again. Ha! My inner goddess is thrilled. I can do this. I can fuck him with my mouth.
Him.
What is that? Like, what is H-E-M-M? Ellipses. It's not in quotes. I don't know what that is.
Hey, man, don't shoot the messenger. I didn't write it.
Like steel encased in velvet. Ugh.
And maybe it's just me being a bit of a prude, but like, I did feel uncomfortable having that read into my ears. That's something. I feel like I just sucked a guy's dick. And then listening to you again, now I'm having like, it's just all coming back to me now.
Like, of all the episodes we've done, like this one, I was like angry because we had talked about it before. Like, oh, it might be
Valentine's
funny to
Day.
Do it. Like, oh, let's do it a Valentine's Day. And it was always one of those that was just on the back that like, oh, it might be funny to just do a 50 Shades episode. But there's nothing funny about this. You deserve better. You can do better than Christian Grey.
That's always,
this isn't sexy. It's not romance. It's abuse.
That's what fascinated me about you really wanting to do this is, for whatever reason, you thought it would be funny. Now, having read the book and seen the movie previously, I knew it wasn't going to be fun.
I thought maybe it would be funny in the way that, like...
Specifically, though, what? Because you didn't have... Because
it wasn't for me. And a lot of times when you make, when there's a movie that has a specific audience, if you're not in that audience, it's fascinating to watch. And it's fun. I watched teenage movies. Like, The Kissing Booth went up on Netflix this week. Some, like, super high school, like, romance. I watch that because those movies fascinate me, because I like seeing it from the outside of not being in that demographic. There's something entertaining about watching movies that are so not for me. And I try to learn stuff, and I try to see what is appealing, and I try to understand that audience a little better. It gives me a wider view of movie. It'd be really, really boring if I only watched movies that were made for me.
But this movie, its demographic didn't even like it.
No, and I get it. I get it. That's the only thing I understand is that, yeah, this movie did not do well because it's terrible. People that should like this movie did not like this movie.
That's kind of why I was surprised, because we're not a bad movie podcast. This is a bad movie, and it's a bad movie that, you know, like we said, should have made a lot more money. It had a built-in audience, and for whatever reason, it didn't deliver to that audience. So I was kind of surprised, not being the guys that are like, oh, and then this movie was stupid.
Yeah. And I mean, we do try to not, but I mean, we've done movies that I didn't think I'd like before, or that I haven't liked before. And I always try to find something. Like, any movie I watch, I will try to find a silver lining there. Because of MoviePass, I've gone and seen movies like Blockers that I would not normally go see, but I can find something appealing about them. Even something terrible like Hurricane Heist. I mean, that one's more for me, but like, I can find stuff about it no matter how bad the movie is. And I do try to look for the positives in it, whether it be an actor that I, maybe it makes me want to look at him a little bit more, or maybe it makes me want to look into a director or writer. There's nothing about this movie. Like, my memory of movies is ridiculous. And I can remember where I saw them, when I saw them, like who was with me on so many. I remember stuff that I saw on cable 18 years ago that I can remember my mood. I want to wipe this completely out of my memory. If you ask me a year from now, if I've seen 50 Shades of Grey, I want to say, like, I don't remember. I don't think so. Like, I know of it, but I've never watched it. That's what I want to do. And I had to sit on it for 2 extra weeks, and then I'm angry about that.
Well, the good news is you can strike that from your contract. You no longer have to sit on it.
And next... I would take anal fisting over watching this movie again. That's receiving end. I would get anal fisted before I had to watch this movie again.
You know, I'm not interested in taking you up on that. I didn't like the movie. I watched the movie again. Maybe that's just where we differ, specifically as it comes to anal fisting. But where we both agree is that we enjoy Star Wars, and there is a Star Wars movie that comes out next week. So we thought, hey, let's do our favorite Ron Howard movies, because he's the director now and not Lord and Miller, and that would have been fun to do one of their flicks. I think they got a producer credit.
And I guess like 80% of it is Howard.
Anyway. Yeah, 70-80%, which is why they were happy to take the producer credit. But next week we'll do our favorite movies featuring Ron Howard. I just went straight up directed by Ron Howard.
I did 100% direct.
Yeah, okay. That's a dude that, you know, you could have certainly put some movies that he was in as an actor, but we both did movies directed by Ron Howard. So that will be next week to celebrate the release of Solo, A Star Wars Story, which I imagine will both, no matter how good or bad the new Han Solo is, I think we'll like him a lot more than we liked Christian Grey, and that's not saying too much.
Alden Ehrenreich. Even he would have been a better Christian Grey.
That was a tough ask. I would rather try and be Christian Grey than be the man that tries to follow Harrison Ford and Han Solo. That's a much harder task, but I'm sure he'll do a much better job. Which I don't think we'll have seen by the time the next one comes out, but I'm sure we'll talk about it over the next couple weeks. But next week, I guarantee you, we will talk about our favorite Ron Howard movies. And to find out what they are, come back next week. But until then,
keep it up.